News from Venezuela. The shocking news over the weekend from Venezuela, and that is, of course, of the capture and the transportation of Nicolas Maduro and his wife out of Venezuela in a US military operation which bombed several sites in Caracas and captured the president of Venezuela, transported him to New York, where he's expected, he and her, both of them are expected to stand trial on indictments for alleged narco trafficking, drug trafficking and weapons cases. And really, the whole world has been in shock at the, I suppose, the swift nature of it, the total abandonment of, I suppose, international law when it comes to removing the leader of another country and the sovereignty of that country. And everyone wondering now what's next and what is going to happen when it comes to, I suppose, the international order, the way things have run for since World War II, all being totally upended with the actions of the American president and the American administration, who seem to be threatening other countries now, including Colombia, and making more noises about somehow annexing Greenland from Denmark. A lot of uncertainty out there, a lot of criticism from other world leaders as well of the actions and of the disregard for international law. With me on the line to talk about this and have a look at, I suppose, where we stand now in this unprecedented era is Bridget Laffin, who is Emeritus Professor of the Robert Schuman Center at the European University Institute from Carrick Sabine originally. Of course, Bridget, good morning to you and thanks for joining us on the programme.
Good morning, Jerry.
My first question is, despite all the discussions and the talk and the threats of action, we assumed it would be some sort of invasion, but how shocked were you at Saturday's events?
So not shocked, because it was very clear for months that the Americans were serious about doing something about Maduro. I think what surprised me was the speed with which they got him out, which means they must have had a lot of inside support, because they were effectively walked to him, the Delta Action Group that went in. And also, apparently, there's been a CIA operation on the ground for months. And so they knew exactly where he was. He wasn't able to protect himself. The Cubans weren't able to protect him, which should really worry them. And it was the speed with which they got him in and out. And now they will charge him under American law. Now, we should say about Maduro, Maduro was not a legitimate leader of Venezuela. He lost the last election and probably the one before. Neither were free or fair. And 8 million Venezuelans have left the country under Maduro and Chavez. So Maduro was no saint. But of course, this was an example of a country taking a decision, the leadership of country A taking a decision to go in to literally physically remove the leader of another country. And of what that reveals to us about international law is that international law only works when it's respected. And the minute great powers disrespect international law, as we saw with Russia and Ukraine, now with this engagement in Venezuela, then the international law has no purchase. It literally does not work if great powers decide. And of course, international law protects small states, because no small state could have even envisaged doing anything like this. So it had to be one of the great powers. So it tells us that we're living in a world of might is right. We're living in a world where, in a sense, the constraints are off. And it's very difficult to predict. We're in a very uncertain world going into 2026. And as you said, there's a lot of noise about Colombia. I would say Cuba's in the frame, because Marco Rubio, he's been a hawk on Cuba. He comes from the Cuban family that went to Miami. He has Cuba in his sights. And then, of course, there is the other example of all the noise around Greenland. And that would be, of all of that, that would be really, would destabilize transatlantic relations even more than they are already, because Greenland is part of the Kingdom of Denmark and therefore part of NATO. And also the Americans have bases there, they have rights there. There is absolutely no justification one way or the other for any of this other than the Trump thinks that, firstly thinks, but also likes exercising this kind of coercive power. But of course, for Venezuela, we don't know what's going to happen. Will there be a transition to democracy? Will there be free and fair elections? Or is it about control of Venezuelan oil resources?
And that's the bigger question. The largest oil reserves in the world, is it just coincidental, or is that part of the reason why Donald Trump gave this the go-ahead? Without international law, with the Might is Right era, is it possible to predict what happens next? Either in terms of what America will do in other countries, or other authoritarian regimes perhaps maybe acting in their own sphere of influence to say, well, do you know what? If it's good enough for America, it's good enough for us.
So, for example, if Moscow has another, they have had several attempts on Zelensky already, but again, then it becomes much more difficult. And then equally, we saw over the new year that China did a lot of maneuvers around Taiwan, basically setting up a strategy for a blockade of Taiwan. So again, in this world of Might is Right, small states are in peril. Small states, Europe, its weakness because of its dependence on US military and on Ukraine buying armaments from the US. Europe is very vulnerable just now. Now, not as vulnerable as small, weak states like Cuba, but certainly it's a world that is a very unfriendly place for a lot of, and very unpredictable.
Yeah. When it comes to South America in itself, this talk of perhaps, maybe as you said, Caribbean, Cuba, and also the threats now against the Colombian president from Donald Trump, are we going back to that era, that Cold War era, where, in a clandestine way, the CIA and the NSA affected regime change in several different countries in South America, often to disastrous effect for that country and their populations? Only the difference now, Bridget, is that it's happening out in the open. The America's going in, capturing the leaders and threatening these countries to have control over the continent. Is that where we're going?
So it's not just Cold War, but it's back to the Monroe Doctrine, where effectively the Americans said, this is our sphere of influence, and we will dictate what happens in this sphere of influence. And when we look at the US national security strategy, which was just issued, it is very much a sphere of influence strategy. So the Americans are stating, as you said, very openly, this is our patch. And of course, you now have right-wing leaders in, for example, the recent election in Chile, in Argentina. So it isn't that the Americans are without support in Latin America. And there will be today a lot of Venezuelans secretly delighted Maduro is gone. But of course, it's no good for them unless it's followed by free and fair elections and a return to some prosperity for Venezuela. I mean, Venezuela should be a rich, prosperous country. It's a tragedy what's happened in Venezuela for a very long time, but the last 15 years have been terrible. So it's this unpredictability which comes right home in terms of Europe, Ukraine, all of that. Taiwan is certainly in play, I would have thought. So the idea of there being a world order, there is now world disorder.
And yeah, international, and that is where...
Sorry,
yes, go on, Bridget.
No, that's we've got to stop thinking of international law as being the same as domestic law. In countries, the laws, there are, guards, there's an army. International law, it really works on restraint. And when the restraint is gone, international law is weakened, literally visibly weakened, as it was with the capture of Maduro.
Yeah. Okay. Princess, stay online. Have a listen to this. This is Micheál Martin speaking in the last while in China. He was speaking in Beijing after meeting with Xi Jinping, the first leader meeting between a Taoiseach and a Chinese president since 2005. And here's what he said about the removal of Maduro by the United States.
It was very interesting this morning. President Xi was very clear on international rules-based approach. Obviously, the One China policy, and we are also committed to the One China policy, and we have articulated that. But again, I think there was a very strong articulation by the president this morning about the importance of adherence to.
Okay, that's a little bit there of. I'm not sure if you could hear that, but he was talking about the One China policy. But he described, Micheál Martin described Maduro's regime as illegitimate and oppressive, but was silent on whether his forced removal by the United States amounts to a breach of international law. And he also admitted in that interview that there is a realpolitik involved in European leaders withholding criticism of Donald Trump's actions this weekend for fear of upsetting a prospective peace deal for Ukraine, which is existential, he said, for other EU members on Ukraine's borders. So what have you made of the European response with that in play?
So, I mean, the only European leader who has been openly and overtly critical is Pedro Sanchez of Spain. All the others have talked about the need for transition, democracy, identified Maduro as illegitimate, as Micheál Martin did. Some of them have talked about the importance of international law, but haven't actually called Trump out. And for me, what that does is it reveals Europe's vulnerabilities and weaknesses at this stage, because they're dependent on buying arms from the US to arm Ukraine, which, and Ukraine has to be kept sovereign, or else European security is in danger. And there is that old dependency, the NATO framework, which in my view, Article 5 of NATO is probably gone. It's dead, but its death hasn't been acknowledged. And Europe needs minimum five years, if not more, to rearm, to develop a credible deterrence again in Europe. So I think Micheál Martin is reflective of European leaders where they are dependent on the United States, concerned about the United States. Are they privately appalled? Absolutely. Are they very worried about Greenland? Absolutely. And I think the reaction on an annexation of Greenland would be different, because it would have to be different. It would be the annexation of part of an EU member state. So there is where, for the Europeans, this is a moment of absolute peril if Greenland is in play. And I think Micheál Martin is right in saying Ukraine is existential for Europe. I don't think there's a peace deal coming. I don't think the Russians want one. And so I see, unfortunately, that war continuing at a very high cost to civilians in terms of the attacks on Ukrainian cities. And the front is broadly stable, you know. There's movement, but very little movement on the line. Of course, what was also exposed in Venezuela is the weakness of Russia. Russia signed a deal with the Venezuelans 2 years ago and couldn't do anything to help them. And their air defenses were simply wiped. I mean, the Americans clearly jammed the Russian air defences, which would worry Moscow in terms of their own air defences on their own territory.
Yeah, and that was my final question to you, is what message does this send to Vladimir Putin? We already saw the loss of influence he had in the collapse of the Syrian Assad regime. Now in Venezuela, powerless to do anything about it. Will that make any difference in his calculations, how he deals with Donald Trump and vice versa?
So I think it tells us that Russia is, and Iran, we should remember Iran as well, couldn't do anything to help them. So Russia is no longer a great power, but it is a large nuclear power and therefore an extremely dangerous country, and most dangerous for Europe than for anywhere else in the world. So in terms of Moscow will understand that They are now more reliant on the Chinese than ever before, and this won't suit them. But they have no choice because their power has declined. But they will use whatever resources they still have, which is nuclear. Not that they will launch a nuclear war or anything, but simply they will use whatever military capacity they have to keep attacking Ukraine.
Yeah, would there be a worry finally that, you know, America might be saying, look, we have our Monroe Doctrine, back to those days, we have our zone of influence, stay out of it, and then China does the same in its area and Russia does the same in its area, that they say, right, we'll carve up the satellite states around us?
So I think there is a worry, but I would reduce it to China and the US. Russia can't control Europe. It can really, with hybrid attacks, it can undermine Europe, challenge Europe, but it cannot militarily take Europe, nor can it influence countries that are, in the end of the day, better resourced and much richer. But it can undermine democracy, it can, at the cyber, the cables, as we saw. So Russia is a menace. I would regard Russia as a disruptor state. But the only two countries, the kind of system-making countries in the world today, are the US and China.
Okay, Bridget, listen, thanks so much for giving us your time.
No, thank you.
No, unfortunately not. As we start here, thanks very much, Bridget. Bridget Laffin there with us on the line, giving her assessment of the geopolitics of what has happened and what it signals for the future. And it's not, as she said, a good news message at the start of January for the way things are going and the actions of the US administration.